Hi, I'm Henat Baba, host of Cross Currents. Did you know KELW is member-supported public radio? When you make a donation to KELW, you're financially supporting the programs you love, and you become a member of the station. We can't do shows like Cross Currents without the financial support of our listeners. You make it all possible. We're in the middle of our spring membership campaign right now, so don't wait. Become a member today with a gift at KELW.org. And from all of us, thank you.
KALW.
You see a pile of stuff, and all of us now, the regulars, we can look at that pile and go, oh, we could hit that in 5 minutes. We could totally clean that up.
One group is keeping fun at the center of something that's causing a lot of grumbling. Litter.
You can go for the grappling hook. I'm just saying.
Today we meet Oakland's Trash Falcons. Then comedian Margaret Cho reflects on her 40-year career.
I've been able to manage this long, great career with, you know, so that to me is really exciting. So the fact that I still love it is the best. To speak like a Gen Z, I am in my goddess era.
Talking about trash and serving up laughs. That's coming up. I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This year, we've been getting a lot of rain. Rain that flowed down creeks into the bay and out to the ocean.
A weather event known as an atmospheric river.
And as it always does, that rain carried trash from our city streets into storm drains and places like Lake Merritt. Reporter Laura Isaza brings us the story of one Oakland group tackling the trash near their home.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Ethan. Hi, Michael. I have some grabbers for you.
On a crisp morning at 9 a.m. sharp, a group of seven people equipped with rubber gloves, hand sanitizer, and plenty of garbage bags gather on a street corner near Lake Merritt.
Oh, we have grabbers.
Yep. Oh, you do. Oh, wow. Look at that. Whoa.
This is Trash Falcons, a self-described ragtag neighborhood group that meets here every Sunday morning. Rain, shine, Christmas, New Year's, they're here, geared up and eager to pick up trash around the neighborhood.
Okay, well, let's get started.
Yeah.
The group is made up of a broad span of ages and genders. Most of them live in the Adams Point neighborhood on the north side of Lake Merritt.
Yeah, so we're all neighbors. We probably have seen each other's cats in the windows.
We still haven't seen your cats. We look every single time.
Guys,
we think you're
patrol.
Making up these cats.
Richard Shirk, alleged cat owner, is the co-founder of the group. What started as a pair of friends looking for COVID-safe things to do in 2020 has now grown through word of mouth to more than 50 people. About 5 to 10 show up on any given Sunday.
Morning.
As the Falcons make their way to the shores of Lake Merritt, they scan the ground for things to pick up. They find all the things you might expect. Drinking straws, plastic wrappers, broken glass, plus some unexpected objects.
A tin of butter cookies.
A microphone.
A little chicken.
A little toy.
A cute little toy.
Aww.
For items far out in the water, Trash Falcon Anna Marie Jones has gotten creative, inventing trash-capturing contraptions, like this one, made from tying a hook to the end of a retractable dog leash.
You can go for the grappling hook. I'm just saying.
Oh, very close.
Ah, yeah!
That creativity has earned her the nickname Q, like the James Bond gadget-making character. As a regular, she's seen her fair share of trash gems.
My most favorite thing that Trash Falcons have ever collected while I was there is what we called Trash Diamond.
Well, it looked like a giant diamond, but it was actually a paperweight. But Richard found it the perfect object to reenact a proposal to his wife, Susan.
The whole thing, on bent knee, the whole thing. So it was kind of that poetic piece of, in the midst of trash, there is beauty, there is love, there is just so much goodness.
Though, in the midst of all that goodness, Trash Falcon Michael Lang says there's also
just the most cigarette butts, I feel like, in the entire world.
Waterlogged cardboard boxes, condoms, half-eaten bags of chips, too many miscellaneous pieces of plastic to count. All these things are met without judgment. Mostly, there's a sense of delight in the air, a positivity that Richard emphasizes is key to the main goal of Trash Falcons, to empower everyday citizens to improve their communities.
The common thing that you hear a lot in Oakland, maybe anywhere, is someone should do something about that. And what we want to tell people is that there's someone, and they can do something about it.
But what makes people want to do something about it? I asked Anna Marie.
This is such a lovely, diverse, interesting, funny group of people that every Sunday it just feels like a happy place to be, and it changes your relationship to garbage. You see a pile of stuff, and all of us now, the regulars, we can look at that pile and go, we could hit that in 5 minutes. We could totally clean that up.
The Trash Falcons clear out as much trash as possible, but there's a lot of trash in Oakland to clean up. And Trash Falcons is just one group of people covering a few blocks in a large city. Trash on that land can make its way into the watershed, says Jesse Olson, Habitat Restoration Director for nonprofit Save the Bay.
Oakland's watershed comprises 15 main creeks and over 30 tributaries.
Rain leads trash to storm drains. Storm drains lead into the creeks and Lake Merritt, and those lead directly into the bay and the ocean. Some cities, like San Francisco, collect and filter nearly all of their stormwater, but most East Bay cities, including Oakland, don't. Oakland does have about 200 trash capture devices installed in waterways to catch trash before it gets into the bay, including 6 in Lake Merritt. But all of these devices only account for the trash coming from just over 3% of Oakland's total land surface.
Trash capture devices? We don't have enough of them.
They're effective, but they're not a catch-all, literally. Sometimes trash capture devices overflow with trash or heavy rains, spilling trash into the bay. And installing and maintaining more trash capture devices is expensive. So are stormwater drainage treatment facilities. So, for now,
you would need to employ a huge army of volunteers and students every single day in order to make a very substantial impact and clear all of that pollution out.
Oakland has also been working on upstream solutions like street sweeping and plastic bag bans to prevent trash from getting into storm drains in the first place. But the SF Bay Water Board is requiring Bay Area cities to reduce all trash discharges to zero by 2025. That's going to be challenging and costly for Oakland. And as for Lake Merritt, because of the trash, it's still considered an impaired water by EPA standards. As Trash Falcon Anna Marie puts it, it's a never-ending amount of garbage. Back at the lake, I asked Anna Marie what Trash Falcons would do if one day they all woke up and the trash was just gone.
One, we'd have a phenomenal party. There's no question about that. But if for some reason we wind up in a situation where, for whatever reason, there's just no trash to pick up, there are other things that need to happen in the neighborhood. Things that need to be cleaned, things that need to be repaired, things that just need people to love and care. So I have no doubt the Falcons would find a new thing.
Community love and care. That's really at the center of what Trash Falcons inspires.
Professionally, I'm in the world of emergency management, and one of the things you can do to make your communities exponentially safer and better on all fronts is to get to know each other and to be close to each other. And whether it's something like Trash Falcons or whatever it is, find a way to shamelessly love your community, to know your neighbors, and you will see all sorts of things getting better.
To fully stop pollution from entering the bay, it'll take a lot more than a single group of neighbors. But Trash Falcon's goal isn't to single-handedly fix the Bay's trash problem. It's to remind people that they're someone who can do something, whether with their time, work, votes, rooted in a belief that community care is contagious. That's at least a drop in the bucket, or a few hundred cigarette butts in the trash bag. At Oakland's Lake Merritt, I'm Laura Isaza for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Whether it's acting, singing, or telling a joke, Margaret Cho knows how to entertain a crowd. The Emmy-nominated artist is celebrating 40 years in the comedy business on a special tour. It's called Live and Livid. Margaret Cho was a teenager when she began performing stand-up at a comedy club near her parents' bookstore in San Francisco. Now, she's a comedic legend. She broke ground in 1994, starring in All American Girl, the first Asian American sitcom on network television. Her comedy and activism have inspired many women, Asians, and people in the LGBTQ plus community. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Margaret Cho.
I just want to start from your San Francisco beginnings. And you grew up in such an amazing neighborhood, Sunset District. Mm-hmm. And you described the community as a melting pot of old hippies, ex-druggies, burnouts from the 60s, drag queens, Chinese people and Koreans. Definitely when I look at you, I look at your artistry, I definitely see San Francisco.
Well, I think San Francisco in the 70s and 80s was really different from the San Francisco we know now in that it was kind of cheap to live there. It was kind of like all artists and people who had like rent controlled apartments. Like, I mean, there was just so much you could be like with living on a very limited budget. And so that really affected the culture a lot. And so I think there was incredible art and music and comedy and political activism happening. And then, you know, so it was a very queer place to grow up. It was a very politically motivated and politically progressive place. We were fighting this misinformation even back then about AIDS and people living with AIDS and HIV. And then my first experiences with punk rock were like in 1980, 82, 84, you had the Rock Against Racism, which featured bands like the Dead Kennedys and all of these incredible like San Francisco punk bands. And then it turned into Rock Against Reagan, which, you know, was really fueling such a fire for young progressives then. So I really love San Francisco. I really love growing up there.
Yeah. And I grew up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I was born in 79. So I couldn't go to all that stuff yet.
You're a little baby. You're just a little child.
Yeah, I would look at my aunts. I'm like, I want to go to the club. Oh. when I was little.
So fun.
So I go to 80s clubs to make up for not being able to go to the 80s clubs when I was, you know, a child. But you, at 14, were performing comedy. What kind of comedy were you doing at 14?
I was just making fun of my family, which I think I still do. So it really is the same thing. Like, also about hanging around with gay men a lot, which is also what I was doing. I was doing it then, still doing it now. So also talking about being a child amongst a bunch of adults, which I think in a lot of ways, I'm still that. So I think a lot of my comedy in my point of view was already really fully formed as a kid. So it was really like this thing of there was no Asian Americans in stand-up comedy. Although there were a lot of Asian Americans in San Francisco. So it was strange mm-hmm. to me how the landscape of television and movies and comedy didn't reflect the real world as I saw it.
I saw a video, I think it was on your social media, where you said your parents were most proud of you for performing on Dancing with the Stars. Yes. Is that still the case?
Yeah, that's what I think was so heartbreaking about the Monterey Park shooting when it happened in these two different ballroom dance studios, because ballroom dance, I think, for older Asian people is really a safe space for them. And it's a real sense of safety and soaring in the dance and celebrating. And these places where we feel celebratory and joyful are so rare when you're an immigrant and you're older, or, you know, older people of color don't have as many safe spaces. And this is like one of them. So that was the most heartbreaking part of it. But, you know, ballroom dance for my family is really, they love it almost as much as they love golf. And that's saying a lot, you know, they love golf. But I competed in Dancing with the Stars. And that was like, my parents treated it like I was in the Olympics.
We're seeing more Asian representation in mainstream media. Still not enough, but we're seeing more. And I know people are calling you a legend because you paved not only this, you know, with comedy, but how you paved the way and opened doors for other Asian artists, for women artists, for queer artists. What does it mean to look back and know how you planted that seed for so many people? And was that your intent, too, when you went in the industry, where you also, too, like, I want to open doors for other people?
Well, it was never my intent because I didn't know that that was possible. But I know now, like I look back and I think that's my greatest achievement, was to make it possible for other people to dream that they could be in show business, for other people who had not seen themselves out there to go forth and make themselves visible and use their voice and put their work out there, you know. And I think that's really, to me, what's really meaningful. But yeah, I didn't have the intention because I didn't know it would have been possible. I just wanted not have to get a day job, which I had many day jobs up until then, which were kind of challenging too. But I was like really lucky that I kind of got in early, that I love what I was doing. And that in itself also was payment enough because I was just in love with the art form of stand-up comedy.
And you evolved too, you know, just even like in your style of comedy. I remember, because I remember when that show All American Girl came on. And then I remember one day I turned on the TV and you had tattoos and you were, and I was like, is that Margaret Cho?
Yeah.
I was like, that looks like Margaret Cho with tattoos. And you were like open about your queerness. And I know people celebrate you for that too, as far as, you know, sometimes people get empowered when they see other people be themselves. Mm. What was that like for you? Just that liberation of like, you know what, this is Notorious Cho, CHO. I remember that special when you came out like that and was like, this is me, you know. How did that feel, that liberation? Was there any fear about even just saying, I'm going to be who I am?
I don't think so. I think that what was happening in the way that culture was really opening up, I think over the last 20 years, we've really kind of expanded our idea of queerness and femininity, and also the establishment of identity as purpose. So it's like, I want to be very strategic in this idea of like, we need to break open all of these stereotypes that we have about Asian women, that it's not about like this submissive, quiet, yearning kind of figure that we had seen in like whatever the opera Madame Butterfly, you know, that we're like yearning for a white man, which is like, to me, it's so limiting to who we actually are, which we can be strong, we can be queer, we can be covered in tattoos or not, or, you know, tattoos are a way for me to claim ownership over my own body because I've healed from so many different things, whether that's eating disorders or different kinds of situations of abuse. I want to claim my body as my own.
Your 40th anniversary.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Everybody can't say they've been in show business for 40 years.
Well, it's a long time, so. But it goes by fast. You know, it's really weird how you kind of wake up and like, oh, I'm 54. Which to me is really, I think it's a good age to keep going.
And so you have an upcoming tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's Live and Livid.
Yes.
Which fits you.
Yes.
when I watch you, you are Live and Livid.
Yes.
And there's so much to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you have a lot of material.
Yes.
Where the world is. You have a lot of material.
Yes.
What can fans expect to see on this tour?
It's really a way to talk about how can we protect our communities? Where can we look to protecting drag queens. You know, this is really alarming that so many of these right-wing white supremacist groups are attacking drag shows. And to me, it's really horrifying. Like, why would you want to attack a drag queen, a drag show? Or why are you looking at that as some kind of mark of the devil? You know, like everybody was like freaking out about the Kim Petras and Sam Smith song Unholy for the Grammys and how it's like red and the devil. It's like, well, it's fun. I mean, it's just so fun. And why do you think it's satanic? And who cares if it's satanic? Like, we don't believe in Satan. There's no such thing. Like, there is no such thing as that kind of evil. What's evil is that kind of thinking that there's something evil or there's something wrong with people who are different from you. I think it's really scary and it's really something to be examined, where we have this Christian evangelical right who are trying to take us back into an era that we don't want to go to.
You've accomplished so much. Comedy, acting, music, activism, entrepreneur, all just awards, just all the good stuff, all the glitter. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of surviving. The fact that the industry and the art form still retains so much mystery and excitement for me. So I really am not jaded by the system and the way that things happen. I'm really still very enthusiastic. So to me, it's the resilience that I've been able to manage this long, great career with, you know, so that to me is really exciting. So the fact that I still love it is the best. To speak like a Gen Z, I am in my goddess era.
That was comedian Margaret Cho speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. Porfirio Rangel co-produced that piece. And you can hear a longer version of that interview at KELW.org. Catch Margaret Cho's show Live and Livid at the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco on June 2nd. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Up next, we'll hear a reading about accepting and loving who you are. It's an episode from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. Monica Weselowska lives in Berkeley. Her new children's picture book is titled Elbert in the Air.
Elbert in the Air is a children's picture book that celebrates being yourself, even when the people around you don't understand. Fortunately for Elbert, his mother does understand, and I am going to read to you from the opening pages of the book. Shortly after he was born, Elbert floated into the air. Soon, his mother had to stretch to reach him. When people heard she stood on tiptoes to feed him, they came from all around to give advice. Net him like a butterfly, suggested one neighbor. Reel him in like a kite, urged another. Deflate him, insisted a stranger, like a balloon. But Elbert was not a butterfly, nor a kite, nor a balloon. Elbert was Elbert, and when he cooed in the air, his mother merely said, if Elbert was born to float, I will let him. As Elbert grew, he floated higher. Soon his mother had to climb the furniture to reach him. All day long, she tossed him toys, which Elbert used to build a floating world above her head. Look, Ma, he exclaimed. Fantastic, Elbert, she replied. And for a while, it was.
That was Monica Weselowska reading from her new book, Elbert in the Air. It came out in February. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.